Welcome to S&C's podcast series, S&C Critical Insights. I'm Tony Lewis, Special Counsel in S&C's cybersecurity practice. Today I'm going to discuss some particular cybersecurity risks associated with the coronavirus, specifically as to phishing, as to business email compromise, and how that manifests in this context, and information security risks. Finally, I'll discuss some things that companies can do to address these risks. Obviously, companies are facing challenges in accommodating most or all of their employees migrating to working remotely. Companies have to balance delivering functioning remote capabilities to their workforce against new or different security risks brought by working remotely. There are more IP addresses outside a company's network trying to connect to it, making it difficult for IT staff to keep track of who is accessing company systems. The company may be managing multi-factor authentication and security requirements for devices connecting to the network. And yet the company's business demands may not have changed, nor have the company's IT infrastructure and staff resources changed. Yet the company needs to allow a much larger number of workers to connect to a company's network remotely. So I'm going to discuss some of the particular risks that may arise from shifting a company's workforce from being physically present to working remotely, alongside some of the issues that relate to the coronavirus directly. First, I'm going to discuss phishing. Most everyone is familiar with phishing emails, which are designed to appear legitimate, but which are devised to deliver malicious software or malware to infect a victim's computer or network. Phishing emails are nothing new, but they are now targeting people's understandable hunger for information about the coronavirus. In fact, there's been a reported increase in the registration of coronavirus-related websites being used to host phishing attacks. One example of a phishing scheme involved emailing a document containing what appears to be legitimate advice for protecting oneself from the coronavirus, while dropping malware onto the victim's computer in the background. Another involved an email purporting to be from a company's vendor, explaining how services would change as a result of the coronavirus, which message also was a vehicle for delivering malware. And some cybersecurity research companies have reported that very sophisticated hackers have been behind spear phishing messages, which are more tailored versions of phishing messages that play on coronavirus themes. In other words, it is not always obvious, even to people who are well-trained, that the messages are malicious. That is particularly true where most people may be receiving emails, some of them legitimate, from unfamiliar sources, which may mean employees are not on guard for messages from new sources the way they ordinarily would be. And hackers often seize on periods of vulnerability or weakness, like holidays and the current environment with people's appetite for information about coronavirus high while they are working remotely, presents a significant opportunity. It should also be noted that phishing campaigns are the common vector or entry point for ransomware attacks that can encrypt a company's data, causing significant disruption to operations. The second area I want to discuss is what's known as business email compromise, because it can present some more acute risks in an environment in which most or all employees are operating remotely. Most of you are familiar with it, but I'll give a little background. They take a few different forms, for example, tricking a key person in finance to send funds, or compromising a company email account to email a bank with wire transfer instructions. Each of these are generally complemented by some amount of reconnaissance or grooming, for example, when certain personnel are unavailable to countermand the instruction, or when payments to vendors are actually due. With that backdrop, you can see how a remote working environment can create added vulnerability. To play that out, imagine what happens when a controller gets a message from what appears to be the personal email account of another executive with instructions to send a wire transfer. Employees may have experienced or imagined that their IT department is taxed, and an explanation that the CEO is having trouble remoting might seem more plausible. Like a good spear phishing message, it might make reference to some inside baseball at the company to lend it some legitimacy. Separately, think about how that or another instruction would be verified. Employees and managers are often not using their company desk phone number while working remotely. On the one hand, working from home means people will believably not be available to pick up a phone call, And in these schemes, pressure is often applied by saying the matter is urgent. You could also imagine an attack could be executed by combining that email instruction with another sophisticated attack to route telephone calls to the hackers instead of to the person who would ordinarily approve the transaction. This is just one basic scenario to consider, but it illustrates that companies should evaluate their controls and procedures with cybersecurity in mind to account for the fact that there is a different operating environment with no one physically present in the office and everyone accessing the company's network remotely. Fundamentally, these are different types of social engineering, and that new operating environment offers new opportunities for bad actors to imagine ways to deceive and manipulate their victims. And these are not just hypothetical. There has been at least one reported incident of a business email compromise scheme occurring in which a victim was asked to transfer funds to a different bank because of the coronavirus. While business email compromise results in a direct financial loss, the same behavioral issues that arise from working remotely can present other risks to information security. A hacker might try to impersonate an employee and contact the IT department claiming that he or she could not get access to the company's network. That may be a common event, and companies may be hardened with procedures to verify an employee's identity, but it may be an area where hackers look to find new vulnerabilities. But the converse, a hacker impersonating an IT administrator, contacting an employee to obtain or verify credentials to access the company's network, requires a broader sensitivity to these issues throughout the organization. And at a time when employees at the company might expect there to be buffeting while the IT system adapts to sustaining a much higher load, getting queries from the IT department may not strike some employees as unusual under the circumstances. And like many phishing campaigns, it can only take one employee to bite in order for the scheme to work. Either of these scenarios, an imposter posing as a user to contact IT, or an imposter posing as an IT administrator to contact another employee, can put the company's information at risk, even if full access is not granted. It can compromise network credentials, expose elements of how the security protocols work, and it can divert information security staff and resources from other areas where their vigilance is needed. With that, it's a good point to talk about what companies can do to mitigate these cyber risks arising from the coronavirus. First, educate and sensitize your workforce. The Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, a federal agency, recently recommended that employees be alerted to increased risk of phishing in connection with the coronavirus. While a bulletin or message to all users is helpful, companies can consider taking a further step and sending a test lure to their workforces, essentially a controlled phishing email addressing coronavirus topics, and see who clicks on it. Second, now is a good time for companies to review their information security policy with an eye to the fact that remote working is the norm rather than an exception. Do the policy's provisions all still apply? And does it cover the risks that exist with remoting? Should new security requirements be put in place? For example, companies can consider restricting access to personal email or to public cloud storage or file sharing systems from company-issued devices. Remote connections with higher security standards, like encrypted VPN or virtual private networks, can take longer, and some employees may try to use workarounds to expedite their work. To the extent employees are using their home Wi-Fi connections to connect to the company's network, companies may consider implementing a policy that requires Wi-Fi connections to adhere to certain security standards. Moreover, with the prevalence of video conferences that substitute for in-person meetings, companies may want to examine their device security standards, whether they are company-issued or BYOD or bring-your-own-device, i.e. personal devices. Hackers surely understand that business is being conducted through video conferences, and surreptitiously gaining access to one of the computers connected to those video conferences could expose confidential information. As part of that review, companies can consider how these cybersecurity risks factor into other financial controls and might consider adding layers of additional security, like voice confirmation for large or non-routine payments, using known or trusted phone numbers for key personnel, and even adding a requirement for a trusted password to be given to authorize those payments. Third, companies' crisis management and incident response plans should be reviewed and potentially updated. While there are additional cybersecurity risks that arise from working remotely, there are separate risks that arise from being able to manage that risk while the people doing so are not co-located. It is a good occasion for companies to engage an incident response company and counsel, if they have not already done so, in order to be prepared and not lose critical time if and when an incident does occur. Companies might also consider reviewing where crucial data resides and ensuring backups exist and are secured. They also might consider resiliency or redundancy measures if the communication channels they now rely on while operating remotely, like their video conferencing vendor, go down or are impaired. That concludes this discussion of cybersecurity risks arising in connection with the coronavirus. Thank you for listening to S&C Critical Insights. For more information about our practice, please visit us on the web at www.solcrom.com.